If you shake the sponge, you may dislodge the cloud of gas. In the same way, when your body gives a little jerk under controlled conditions, the astral body jumps free. The best way to prepare for astral travel is to think about it. Think about it very seriously from all aspects, because as you think today, so you are tomorrow, and what you think about today, you can do tomorrow. Ask yourself, why do you want to do astral travel? Ask yourself honestly. What really is your reason? Is it merely idle curiosity? Is it so that you can spy on others, or do you want to fly through the night and peer into bedrooms? Because if that is your objective, you would be better off without astral travel. You must be sure that your motives are right before you do astral travel, or even before you try to do astral travel. Then, having assured yourself that your motives will stand the strictest inspection, prepare the next step. When you go to bed, alone, make sure you are not tired. Make sure that you are fresh enough, that you can stay awake. Everyone can do astral travel, but the majority of untrained people fall asleep in the process, which is very annoying indeed. So go to bed before you are tired and rest in any way comfortable in your bed, and then think that you are moving out of your body. Let yourself become completely relaxed. Have you a tension in your big toe? Does your ear itch? Have you an ache in the small of your back? Any of these will indicate that you are not truly relaxed. You must be truly relaxed, just as a sleeping cat is relaxed. And having been quite sure that you are relaxed, imagine that something is coming out of your body. Imagine that you are the gas seeping out of the sponge. You might experience a little tingling, you might hear some short, sharp crackles, or you may get pins and needles in the back of your neck. Fine. That means you are coming out. Now be very, very sure that you keep still. It is utterly necessary that you do not panic. It is absolutely vital that you do not feel fear, because panic or fear will slap you back in the body and give you quite a fright. It will also effectively prevent you from consciously astral traveling for about 3 months. Astral travel is normal. It is utterly, utterly safe. No one can take over your body, no one can harm you. All that can happen is this: if you are frightened, unpleasant astral entities will smell or see the color of fright, and will with the greatest of glee try to frighten you more. They cannot hurt you, they cannot hurt you at all. But it does give them great pleasure if they can frighten you so much that you are chased back into your physical body. There is no secret in astral travel, it just needs confidence. It just needs the firm knowledge that you are going to do astral travel while you are fully awake. And the best way to start about it is to imagine that you are traveling, imagine that you are out of the body. This word imagination is badly misused. Perhaps it would be better to say picture. So, picture yourself leaving your flesh body, picture yourself gradually inching out of your flesh body and floating inches above the recumbent flesh body. Actually picture yourself doing it, actually form the strong thoughts that you are doing it, and sooner or later you will do it. You will find, with the greatest amazement, that you are floating there, looking down upon a padded, whitish-green, flesh body. Probably, it will have its mouth open, probably it will be snoring away, because when you are out it doesn't matter at all if your flesh body goes to sleep, when you are out. Because if you get out while the body is awake, you will remember the whole experience. This is what you have to imagine: you are resting completely relaxed on your bed in any position which suits you, provided it is comfortable and relaxed. Then you think of yourself, slowly edging out from the flesh covering, from the flesh body, slowly edging out and rising and floating a few inches or a few feet above the flesh body. Do not panic even if you do get a few sways and tilts, because you cannot be hurt. You cannot be hurt at all, and as you are floating you cannot fall. When you have got to that stage, rest a while. Just keep still, you don't need to feel panic nor triumph, just rest peaceably for a few moments. And then, if you think you can stand the shock, and depending on what sort of a body you've got, gaze down on the thing you've left. It looks all lopsided. It looks lumpy and heavy, it looks an untidy mess. Well, aren't you glad to get away from it for the time being? With that thought, you should take a look at the world outside. So will yourself to rise, will yourself to float up through the ceiling and through the roof. No. You won't feel anything, you won't get a bump or a scrape or a jar. Just will yourself to float up, and picture yourself so floating. When you get out through the roof, stop when you are about 20 or 50 feet above and look about you. You can stop by thinking that you are stopped. And you can rise by thinking that you are rising. Look about you, look at your surroundings from a viewpoint that you have never seen before so far as you can remember, get used to being out of the body. Get used to moving around. Try floating around the block. It's easy. You just have to tell yourself where you are going, and you just have to tell yourself how fast you are going. That is, do you want to go along slowly as if blown by the breeze, or do you want to go there instantly? People write and say they have tried everything they know to do astral travel but, for some reason or other, they did not succeed. A person will write and say, I had a strange tickling in the back of my neck. I thought I was being attacked and it frightened me. Another person writes in to say, I seem to be lying on the bed without the power to move, I seem to be looking through a long red tunnel with a glimmer of something which I cannot describe at the end. And yet another person writes, oh, my goodness me. I fell out of my body, and I was so frightened that I fell back in again. But these are perfectly ordinary, perfectly normal symptoms. Each of these symptoms can occur when you are getting out consciously for the first time. These are good signs. Signs that you are able to astral travel consciously. Signs that you have your hand on the door, so to speak, and the door is slowly opening. But then you take fright right on the threshold of this wonderful experience, you panic, and back you go into that damp, miserable clay case again. Only fear can cause you any real difficulty. Everything else can be overcome. But fear, well, if you will not master your fear of the apparently unknown, what can one do for you? You have to make some effort yourself. You can't put some money in a slot machine and get some pre-packaged astral travel kit, you know. Well, when you get a tickling sensation, it means that your astral body is actually freeing itself from the physical body, and for some particular reason the process is causing a tickle which is, after all, some slight form of irritation. It just means that you have not been doing astral travel very often, because with practice the separation of the two bodies becomes easier and easier. Just by way of digression, let me tell you this, I was writing this chapter on astral travel, and I suppose I was thinking about it too intensely or something. And immediately I found myself floating above this building, right outside, and looking down. A member of my household was just coming up the road carrying a load of groceries. I saw her come in and have a mild listen at my door to see if I was working or not, and then undecided she passed on to another room. I looked about and thought, oh, my goodness me. I'm shirking. And dived back again straight into the body, and carried on working. But it just shows that when one is practiced in astral travel, it is no more difficult to get out of the body than it is to leave a room by opening a door and stepping out. Actually, it's less effort. It is far less effort. When a person is reclining and then suddenly feels paralyzed, that is a perfectly normal sign. There is nothing wrong with it. It just means that the separation of the two bodies is preventing physical body motion, and the so-called paralysis is a misnomer really. It is just a strong physical disinclination to move. One often, at the same time, seems to be peering through a long tube, it might be a red tube, or it might be a black or grey tube. But it doesn't matter what color it is a good sign, it shows you are getting out. The biggest thing to fear is fear itself, because all these things are perfectly ordinary. There is nothing at all unusual in them. But if you are going to give way to panic, well, you come straight back into the body with a real clunk, and if you come back in misalignment, then you'll have a sick headache for the rest of the day, until you go to sleep again and relocate your astral in the physical. It sometimes happens that one gets slightly out of the body and then a swaying motion is experienced. That's all right, too. It just means you have not learned how to handle the astral body properly. You can think of it as a person learning to steer a motor car. You get in the wretched thing and give the wheel a turn, and turn too far. So you turn the other way, and you find you are turning too far that way. So you progress in a sort of S-curve until you learn to manage the steering properly. It is precisely the same with the astral. You start emerging from the body and then, when you are a few inches out, you sort of lose your nerve. You do not know how to get it out a foot, 2 feet, etc. And so you stay there swaying. The only thing to do is to visualize yourself as out. Yes, no doubt much of this appears to be repetition to you. Deliberately, it is repetition because you need to get this firmly established that astral travel is quite normal and quite easy, and not at all dangerous. The only thing to fear is of being afraid. And you need only fear being afraid because it puts back your progress. It's like locking on the brakes hard. Once you are in a state of fear, you are not in control of yourself, and your body chemistry gets jangled. So, do not be afraid, because there is no cause whatsoever to fear anything in the astral. It really is a superb, a glorious experience to just get out of your physical body and float along in the air. You do not have to do long journeys. You can let yourself just drift, perhaps 30 or 40 feet above the ground. You will feel a gentle rise from air currents, especially when you pass over trees. Trees give a nice updraft, a warm sort of friendly updraft, and if you let yourself float and maintain a constant height over a clump of trees when in the astral, you will find that your vitality improves very greatly. But this astral travel is a pleasure which has to be appreciated. There are no words which can adequately describe it. You are out of the body and you feel free. You feel as if you had been recharged with life. You feel as if you are sparkling all over, and it is one of the best experiences of all. It can be your experience too, you know, if you really want it. Thousands of people have written to me saying how surprisingly easy they now find astral travel, telling me of their travels, and telling me that they have seen me on their astral travels. What these people can do, you can do also. But let us go into the matter a little further to try to find out what is preventing you from enjoying this wonderful experience. First of all, do you sleep alone? That is, in your own room. Because if you share a bed with someone else, then you may find it a bit difficult. There is always the fear that another person turning over will disturb one's astral flight. So, while initiating astral travel, you should always be alone, quite alone in your room. One cannot, for example, easily practice astral travel when one lives in barracks with a lot of other men or a lot of other women. Nor can you easily start astral travel if you have just been married. You have to be alone, you have to keep your mind on astral travel, and then you can do it. From letters it appears that the greatest vice of those who are trying to astral travel is impatience. North Americans in particular want instant astral travel. They are not prepared to wait for it, nor to work for it. They have no patience. They want to think faster than fast and quicker than now. Well, it's not done in that way. You have to be in the right condition first. You have to exercise patience just as if you had been in bed a long time. You would have to exercise patience while you are relearning to walk. Have patience, then, and have faith that you can do this thing. Visualize yourself floating above your body, because imagination is a most potent force. And if you can get yourself started, well, the rest is utterly simple. Astral travel is the simplest thing that we can do. Even breathing needs some effort. Astral travel needs the absolute negation of effort. After impatience, the next great fault preventing one from getting into the astral state is overtiredness. People flap about all day, rushing about like a hen with its head chopped off, dashing to the cinema or to the supermarkets and cavorting around the country. Then, when they are nearly dropping with tiredness, they get in bed and think they will do astral travel. Well, they do, but they are so tired that they go to sleep and forget all the traveling, or rather forget all the experiences of that travel. Make no mistake about it, you do astral travel when you are asleep. The trick is to stay awake and do it, and it is just a knack which one has to acquire as one gets the knack of breathing. The doctor slaps one's bottom when one is born, and one draws an outraged breath so that one can yell in protest, and breathing is started. Well, I can't come and slap you all on the bottom to start you astral traveling. But it really is a simple matter and needs just a little knack. impatience and overtiredness, then are the two great causes of failure to remember. There is another cause, constipation. If you are constipated, you are usually so gloomy that the poor, wretched astral form is imprisoned in a congested lump of clay. Constipation is the curse of civilization, and perhaps as it is so important for our astral travel studies that one be not constipated, we should devote a whole chapter to health things. So read on later in this book on how to get rid of constipation. When you get garbage out of your body, you will find that you are so much freer that you can get into the astral. Someone wrote to me and said, "But look, all these astral bodies that you say float around by day and by night, why don't their silver cords get entangled? Why don't they collide? You say that thousands of people leave their bodies and soar upwards like balloons on the end of a string. How can this be without hopeless tangling occurring?" The answer to that is easy. Everyone has a different frequency, every physical body has a certain frequency, and the astral body has a frequency several, well, I'm not musical, but let me say octaves higher. The astral body is obviously on a harmonic of the physical body, but the vibration is many million times faster than in the physical body. Everyone has a different frequency, or different rate of vibration, and if you get the BBC, London, on your radio, you get the BBC, London. You do not get Radio Turkey or Radio Peking on that wavelength or frequency. One could say that the frequencies of radio stations do not interfere with each other, and in the same way the frequencies of different astrals do not interfere with each other, so they cannot collide, so there is no tangling, no confusion. On a busy street in a busy city you will have people bumping into each other, and either apologizing or scowling, according to their makeup. But such things never occur in the astral. There are no collisions. The only ones that can come close to each other in the astral worlds above the lower astral are those who are compatible. You cannot have discord, and a collision is usually a discord, is it not? Everyone knows that many people say, "This problem, I can't deal with it now, I'll sleep on it. I shall have the answer in the morning." Well, that's fair enough. Because people with problems take the problem into the astral world, and if they can't solve it themselves, there is always someone available who can. And then if they can't do conscious astral travel, they still come back with some memory of how the problem can be solved. People like great musicians go to the other side and go to a zone above the lower astral. They hear this wondrous spiritual music, and then, because they are basically musical, because they have musical perception, they memorize it. And when they awaken in the morning, or they might even waken specially, they rush to a musical instrument and, as they think, compose. Some great composers kept paper and pencils by the bedside so that if they woke up with inspiration they could write down the musical notation immediately. This is stuff they have learned in the astral. This is music, which they learned in the astral. And it is a legitimate use of astral travel. A great inventor may have seen something in the astral, but possibly he didn't do astral travel consciously. So when he awakens in the morning, he has a wonderful idea for a new invention, and he rushes to his notebooks and he writes down specification and draws squiggles. And then, well, he has invented something which the world has wanted for quite a long time. Many highly successful businessmen use astral travel consciously or unconsciously. This is how it works. A man who is very successful at interviewing decides that he is a very tough person to see on the morrow. So when he is in bed, he goes through his routine and he talks to himself, and says what he proposes to say to his prospect when he meets him tomorrow. He anticipates the objections and arguments of the prospect and he refutes them as he lies there in bed. Then he falls asleep. His astral has got the idea, and when the physical body is asleep, the astral gets out and goes in search of the body, or the astral, of the prospect, and tells the prospect what is going to be said on the morrow, and also tells the prospect what action the latter should take. On the morrow at the interview, the two greet each other like old friends. They are sure they have met before. They find they are getting along famously, and the successful interviewer puts over his points to the prospect and really does get the action desired. It is simple, highly successful, and entirely legitimate. So, if you want to get success in business or love, well, go in for astral travel. You get your word in first. You get the action you desire firmly implanted into the prospect's mind. A lot has been said about getting out of the body, and you can get out of the body. Once out, you can always return. I suppose never in history has there been an authentic case when a person could not get back. You can get back all right, but you want to get back in the most pleasant conditions, because if you get all slap happy and just jump into your clay case, you can get a headache. When you are coming back from your astral travel, you see your flesh body lying there on the bed, usually in a contorted attitude. Eyes shut, mouth open, limbs in wild abandon perhaps, and you have to get into that body. Visualize yourself lowering, and lowering, and lowering. Oh, so gently. Then when you are just barely out of contact, put your own limbs in precisely the same attitude as that of the physical body. And then let yourself be absorbed into the body like moisture being absorbed by blotting paper. You are in the body, it's a cold and clammy thing indeed, but you are in and there has been no shock, no jerk, no unpleasantness. But supposing you were clumsy and you got in with an awful jerk. Then you'll find that you've got an awful headache, you'll find that you feel sick. There is only one thing to do, no medicine, no drugs, will help you at all. There is only one possible cure, and it is this: you must lie still with your feet together and your hands together, and you must let yourself go to sleep, even though it be for a few moments only. Go to sleep so the astral body can ease out of the physical body and then sink down and relocate exactly. When it is relocated exactly, you have a sense of well-being and no headache. And that's all there is to it. In this chapter, quite a lot has been said about astral travel. Far more than need have been said. But the whole idea was to repeat things from different angles so that you could perhaps grasp the underlying statement that it is so very, very easy. You can do it provided you do not try too hard. You can do it provided you have patience. You cannot go along to a ticket agency or travel agency and just book an astral flight, you know. Some of the flights cost a lot of money, but in the astral world it's all free. And you can have it, for free, if you have patience and are not too tired. So go to it. It truly is a wonderful, wonderful sensation. Chapter 3, John Thomas was a fine, upstanding young member of the little Welsh community. A loyal, vociferous member of the Wales for the Welsh, Look You movement. He was an acknowledged leader of the group who shouted invective when the Prince of Wales to be appeared in the principality. Loud and shrill he was. Indeed, when he translated strange bardic oaths into the English language and hurled them at the heads, or ears, of English tourists harmlessly visiting the seat of Welsh culture. Down at the Leek and Daffodil he threw a pretty dart at the heart of the English tyrant, wait for, look you, as he stopped for a moment or so from his endless beer imbibing. Many were the tales he told of English atrocities as he waited for his unemployment benefit provided free by a parsimonious England. By night he would steal out with a paint pot and brush and, first making sure he was unobserved, paint witty remarks on any convenient wall, always against the English, of course. But one day he appeared at the Leek and Daffodil looking grim and glum as well as morose and moody. "What is it that ails you, John Thomas?" inquired a friend. "You look kind of wilted." John Thomas sighed and groaned and wiggled his ears. "Ah, woe is me!" he exclaimed, rolling his eyes heavenwards but keeping a tight hold of his tankard. "Woe is me, my dole has run out and I can get no more from the filthy English, now I shall have to work in the land of my fathers." He turned away and quickly grabbed the filled tankard of a man whose attention had been distracted. Draining the stranger's first, then his own, he hastened away. Next day, with heartfelt lamentations, he took a job as a tourist bus driver and was henceforth known as Thomas the Bus. Sadly, sadly, he drove English tourists on their excursions, answering their questions with a pleasant smile, but holding black murder in his heart. Days wore on and Thomas the Bus wore out. More and more morose he became, look you. And no longer was his voice raised in song. No longer did he raise the tankard for even gift beer. He grew lethargic, listless, languid, and lazy. No longer did he daub graffiti on the walls at night, No longer did he object or raise a commotion when, being detected in short-changing his tourists, an Englishman sang, "Taffy was a Welshman, Taffy was a thief. Taffy came to a house and stole a round of beef. It is under the weather that I am indeed," he quoth to a crony, "and I feel that my shadow is more substantial than I myself am. Perhaps I should hie me forth and consult old Williams the med." Off he tottered on shaking limbs and painfully hauled himself up the three steps to Williams the med. Dr. William soon disposed of the other patients and called in Thomas the bus, exclaiming, "Well, what is it with you, my man?"
"Oh, Dr. Williams," exclaimed Thomas the bus, "I can sing no more and I cannot raise my tankard."
He looked about furtively and then in a conspiratorial whisper mumbled, "That's not all I can't do either." His voice sank lower and lower, and at last Dr. Williams said, "Yes, my man, I know exactly what is wrong with you. As Thomas the bus, you are crouched over your controls and it has constricted your bowels." His voice rose to an angry roar, "You are constipated, my man, constipated, full of useless rubbish. Would you have rubbish in your house? Wouldn't you take it outside for the sanitary attendant's attention?" Thomas the bus hung his head in shame, and he mumbled, "Yes, my bus goes every day but I only go once a week. I received many, many letters, 30 or 40 a day as I have already stated, and a surprising number are about medical problems. Many people, women especially, do not feel very happy about going to see a doctor and discussing some of the more common and perhaps embarrassing illnesses, dysfunctions, or complaints, so they write to me. In this chapter 1 I'm going to deal with one or two health problems, but the first one of all is constipation. This is probably the most insidious complaint or illness ever to afflict mankind. One takes action about other types of illness. If you have bad toothache, you have a wretched thing yanked out. If you have a broken leg, you have the bones set. But constipation, people seem to think it is like the poor, always with us. Many people place great faith in the wise words of doctors, but doctors are often in the hands of the pharmaceutical manufacturers. The common cold, and even more common constipation, are what one might term the bread and butter illnesses of the pharmacists. Billions of pounds or dollars have been and will be spent on cures for colds and constipation. Well, the doctor abides, or should abide, by two ancient laws, the first of which states that the art of medicine consists of musing the patient while nature cures the illness. The second is primum non nocere, which means first do no harm. Whatever a doctor does, then, should be in accordance with those two laws. The first, gain the patient's interest and hope that nature will cure the illness, and second, do no harm. Unfortunately, in the opinion of many people, the doctor is doing a great harm when he omits to warn people of the dangers of constipation. Constipation interests us who want to do astral travel for the sole reason that if a person is habitually constipated, it is not possible to do conscious astral travel while one is fully awake. So, if you want to go out on astral journeys, make sure that your inside is all right first. Inner cleanliness is important, isn't it? The very ancient Chinese medical records indicate that early Chinese leaders, emperors and empresses, and great warlords, used clysters to make sure that their interior was at least as clean as their exterior. A common name for clysters nowadays is enema, so let us use the common name, because clysters rather reminds one of the cloisters in some old church, and we are far removed from that when we deal with enemas. One, the very early Chinese used narrow bamboo tubes fitted into larger tubes, and that had a piston which propelled the herbal solution into the intestines. The Egyptians as well got into the act, possibly they got the idea from the Chinese. But round about L 500 BC the Egyptians were using enemas as an ordinary routine method of treating ill health. The idea was, if you have a pain inside, you get rid of all the waste product which probably causes it. Some of their enema solutions were distinctly messy, oil and honey blended together was quite a common matter. In French times, in about L 400 or so, enemas were very much in use. Soon after that, the enema became a fashionable method of treating illness, and many very high-ranking families had at least one enema a day.